Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga und läuft dann in Keeper Freisel rein. Iredale vollendet 4:0.
Beste. Ball kommt in die Mitte und zu Kleindienst! Kleindienst!
Güter. Linke Seite ist blank, vielleicht. Ja, vielleicht! Vielleicht zieht er ihn in Salazar.
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. On today's edition, we'll be discussing all of the action from the penultimate match day of the 2023 calendar season. It has been an incredible weekend of football once more in what can only be described as the best league in the world. I mean, you already know it as you're listening to this podcast that this league just continues to produce unpredictable football and the masses are there to see it. To help me discuss all of the action from match day 16, it's the first time we have a warm welcome for Marie Schulte-Borchum. She is a freelance sports journalist based in Munich who's working for the Bundesliga and Sport 1. Marie, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me on. Looking forward to it.
It is an absolute pleasure. And without further ado, let's crack on to the action. And we're going to start at the Stadion under Bremerbrücke, Osnabrück hosting St. Pauli. St. Pauli looking to extend their lead atop of the Zweite Bundesliga table. Osnabrück hoping to get off the schneid, off the basement, and heading towards a little bit of safety. Obviously, they were very poor last week against Schalke, but they were hoping for a little bit more come against the league leaders. They didn't get off to a great start, though. They were behind after 6 minutes. An excellent set-piece routine from St. Pauli, and Jackson Irvine, who'd scored in midweek, gets on the score sheet. It's his third goal of the season. And St. Pauli just dominated the game in the first half, but failed to really convert those chances. And as we talk about so often in this league, if you don't take your chances, you'll be punished. And Osnabrück, much improved in the second half, really started to bring on the pressure and the heat. And on 82 minutes, they get their goal through substitute Charalampos Markridis. But also, St. Pauli, in the end, probably could have had a goal if not for goalkeeper Philip Kuhn, who made his first start of the season. An interesting decision by Uwe Koshinat, but ultimately his big save ability in the second half in particular helped Osnabrück snatch a point. And Maria, I'll bring you in here. St. Pauli, who are on this incredible run of form, I think it's like 21 games unbeaten in all competitions, and they'll be a little bit disappointed in the sense that the second half really got away from them. Osnabrück really brought the intensity and the pressure that you expect from an Uwe Koshinat coach side. And it's quite fascinating that a team that's been so almost impenetrable all season, the last couple of games, they've shown a little bit of weakness.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, going into this, and still this was first against last in the league. So everyone expected anything but a 1-1 draw. And I think this will really energize Osnabrück, give them a lot of faith and courage moving forwards. This will be a really big point for them, I believe.
100%. And where points are vital, and Uwe Koshinat is a very experienced manager of damage limitation, shall we say. He's done it at Sandhausen, wasn't able to achieve that with Arminia Bielefeld. But you could definitely get a sense that, and there was a feeling within the stadium that the players had bought into what was asked of them in the second half. And at every given opportunity, we know you see players are sort of trying to rev up the crowd, but the crowd were really getting invested in this game. And one thing that really sort of typifies what Koshinat wants to do is he wants hard charges, players who are willing to get down and dirty and do the sort of the one percenters. And going forward for them, whether that's a sustainable form of football, it is certainly something that they need to look at if they're going to try and get out of the bottom two. Because given the results of the weekend, that points deficit for them is now 9 points. And even at this stage of the season, does seem like it could be a task too tall for them.
Yeah, I mean, this was always going to be a tough season for them. Who knows? I think we also on this game, how much they can benefit at their home games with the atmosphere, with that very special stadium, with the fans. And you only need to look at one league up towards Heidenheim, who managed to get their fourth home win of the season already, to show how much something like that can count in the end, especially for these older clubs that have so much heritage and local support as well.
Absolutely, and even in their previous times in the Zweite Bundesliga under Daniel Thun, the Bremer Brook has always been quite the fortress for Osnabrück, and you know, for them to really progress and find a way to get out of this hole, even with the goal should be to try and make the relegation playoffs if possible. The home has to be where the points come from, because their away form has been quite up and down. And in a lot of games this season, they've actually been in the hunt to take a result, and have fallen foul to some pretty unfortunate goals coming in stoppage time. So, look, for them, there are a few things they definitely need to work on. Set-piece defending was a problem in this game. St. Pauli were able to create plenty of high-quality scoring chances from set-pieces. Irvine, in particular, who did score the goal, could have easily had two or three in this game just from the corner work of St. Pauli. But Irvine did say it best throughout the post-game, believing that the result was quite a fair one. Osnabrück were definitely a different side in the second half. We have to deal with that in the future. And I think that was a really good point, because, you know, obviously they've had quite a busy schedule this week with the DFB Pokal beating Homburg, finding out they've got Fortuna Dusseldorf in the round of eight. But what impressed you about St. Pauli? Because they've obviously been on a really good tear, unbeaten this season. And look, they look very almost Bundesliga ready. What's one thing that excites you about them?
I think just their ability to create chances and kind of keep their head. You know, they kept playing, they kept attacking in the second half, even though they were, you know, secure a really early lead. And just, I think it just comes down to capitalizing on that and being more clinical in front of goal. But I think they have all the ingredients to proceed to the first division. And they've been so strong under Hürzeler. I really think he's one of the great coaching talents in Germany. And yeah, it's just exciting to see all that they're capable of at the moment.
Absolutely. They've got Wien Wiesbaden next weekend, the final match day of the Hinrunde, whereas Osnabrück have a tricky task. They are heading to the Olympiastadion to take on Hertha BSC. Let's talk about St. Pauli's neighbours, Hamburger SV. They welcomed Paderborn to the Volksparkstadion on Saturday afternoon. After the disappointment of losing on penalties to Hertha in the Cup, they were hoping to get back to winning ways at home. They got off to the perfect start. An absolute brilliant goal from Laszlo Benes on 10 minutes. Chests it down to himself and then hits it first time. Pele Bovink, confused, as understandably you wouldn't expect anyone to shoot from there, but a fantastic goal nonetheless. But the lead lasted all but 10 minutes. A silky move from Paderborn resulted in Florent Muslia finding Philipp Bilbier and the former Hamburg player scoring against his former club. And you bet he was delighted about that, no questions asked. But despite Hamburg's dominance in this game, they fell apart. A mistake by Dennis Hansi Kardunic at the back allowed Ilias Anza, and Anza scoring his first goal in the Zweite Bundesliga, and a vital goal for Paderborn. Paderborn winning 2-1 in this game. And the thing that really stands out, besides the individual errors from Hamburg, woefully inefficient in front of goal. They had a ton of high-quality chances against this Paderborn defense, which has been quite hit and miss this season. And you look at your Robert Glatzels, who was extremely lively in this game. And the fact that he didn't score a goal was quite a telling situation of where Hamburg are. We know they're good, but it seems the only thing that holds them back is themselves.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, although maybe to a neutral observer, being third in the league at this point might not sound like the end of the world, there's definitely a kind of end of the world atmosphere in Hamburg at the moment. I actually talked to some fans on the weekend, and they were saying that midweek after the DFB Pokal, where they went out on penalties at Hertha, the fans kind of turned on the players. And then that, you know, we just saw their first home defeat in the league all season. And there are a lot of calls about, you know, asking for the dismissal of Tim Walter. And yeah, it's just, there's never peace and quiet around Hamburg, is there? But yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's a lot seems to be going amiss there at the moment.
Yeah, and I think the sort of differentiation of Volta versus previous renditions of Hamburg is we kind of know what Volta's going to provide, and it's there's plan A, and when things go wrong, there's just plan A. There's very rarely an alternative solution, and the fact that they've stuck with Volta for 2.5 years, a third season, is quite unnatural given the prior seasons in the Zweite Bundesliga. Promotion is the goal. And look, the cup game, they were beaten by one player. Fabian Riese just dominated the entire game, and they didn't have an answer for him. And it was like watching Iron Robin. You know he's going to cut to his left, and they don't have an answer for him. And it was similar in that game. And the game against Paderborn, just like Hansi Kadunic comes off the bench. It's an unlucky slip, but you know that Paderborn are a pretty good counter-attacking side, and they chanced it, which was amazing. And Anser, who is a relative unknown, hasn't started often this season. Cool finish, really good finish, and you just wanted the mental psyche. It's been a really weird week for them, in the sense that they had the game against St. Pauli, which they came from 2 goals down. They showed great resolve, great character, real developed of a team that would never have done that last season, let alone previous renditions. They lose the cup game in a game that they conceded 2 goals in stoppage time, one at the end of the 90, and then essentially minute 120 to John Joe Kenny. They lose the penalty shootout. And it's I mean, like, a week's a long time in any sport, but it does feel like at times they lose belief in what the plan is. And in a game where they really had the better chances, they were denied by a goalkeeper who's played twice all season in Bovink, who made a really great save on Benesch in stoppage time to deny an equaliser. They just... a Paderborn defence that isn't particularly strong. And it's just another underwhelming chapter of what we've seen from Hamburg, which is a team that, in its sixth attempt, is still trying to find a way out of the Zweite Bundesliga.
Yeah, and I think, especially in this game, if we just look at the last 25 minutes, it just got so out of control. You know, they really should have capitalized on the red card for Bilbia in the 69th minute. And instead, I think it was like 8 minutes later, they got a red card for Muheim. So, there would have been plenty of time to equalize and capitalize on having a player more on the pitch, you know, especially with legs getting tired towards the end of the game. And instead, just temperance were running high. And then in the final phase, we saw, I think, 4 total yellows on both sides. It just got really wild. And this goes again to what you were saying about Tim Walter always having a plan A, not necessarily a plan B. I think in those types of situations, it's also up to the coach to quiet down and calm the team, and they just didn't succeed in that at home against a mid-of-the-table side. So that was really disappointing, I thought.
Yeah, and it does raise a lot of questions about Volta, because if you look at his experience with Stuttgart, he made it to the end of the Hinrunde before he was axed, and Stuttgart gained promotion. The years at Kiel, where he got them to the relegation playoff. He's clearly a top-tier manager for this division, but not in the sense that he can progress them to their final destination. Now, obviously, this can be a massive overreaction if they win against Nuremberg and, you know, life is good again and they're inside the top, you know, they're sitting comfortable in third heading into the Winterpause. But for a club that has just so desperately tried to get out of this division, I said it at the start of the season, this is very much last chance saloon for not only Volta, but for a bunch of players who might have greater ambitions of playing first division football, whether that be in Germany or elsewhere. And the pressure is on. Like, there's no doubt about it. When you go to a club that has such high motivation, high intensity, and a club that has seen itself as a higher power of Germany for quite a long time, this gross, what could only be described as gross underachieving, isn't going to be tolerated. And as much as the patience has been with Tim Walter, one might have to question whether Jonas Bolt is also in that conversation, given that he's the one who's helping build the squad for Walter.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, they do have on paper the highest value squad in the league, and there's no way that they should be behind Kiel, you know, on paper. So it's so tricky. They have a young squad. The average age is 24. They have a squad that's been in that kind of unit. You know, they've been together for plenty of years with some fine tuning. Obviously, Ferai came in this summer, but it's just, I think it's a mix. I think it's a mix between what the manager makes of what is a very good squad. And then you, of course, now you do have to ask why, you know, is it perhaps a lack of quality? And then that brings in Jonas Bold as the architect of the squad. But it is sad. I mean, I was at the first game of the season in the stadium, the 5-3 against Schalke. And I don't know if all the listeners have been at our home game, but it is impressive, you know, like it's a city and it's a club and a fan base that really deserves more. I mean, it was magical. It was like some of the best atmospheres I've heard in Germany, and 6 seasons in a row in the second division, like you said, for a club that considers itself, you know, a top 3 or 4 or 5 side in Germany, historically. There's just a big gap in expectations and reality. I mean, traditionally they do go into the winter break a bit more stable, and then they lose points in the second half of the season, and now they're already looking a bit shaky. So I do wonder if maybe this is the time where Tim Walter has to leave before the end of the season.
All eyes will be eagerly watching what happens. That is the soap opera of Hamburg. They've got Nuremberg. That is a world feed game on ESPN Plus, BN Sport Connect. Check your local listings and guides to see when that is available in your local country and territory. Paderborn, they've got Hansa Rostock at home on Friday night to end their Hinrunde. We spoke about Kiel just before. Let's talk about them. They made the journey to the Merkur Spiel Arena in Dusseldorf on Sunday. That is today recording that. 1-0 the final score for them. A Lewis Holtby goal on 18 minutes was enough to see Kiel make it 5 wins on the bounce and the only team inside the top 5 to take all 3 points. And Marcel Rapside is humming to a second place heading into the winter break. And it was a fortunate goal. Philip Zander's absolutely thunderous strike cannoning off the crossbar. And Lewis Holtby towering over Jamil Siebert, who is much the taller, but Holtby soaring like an eagle, getting the header, and it's sneaking past Florian Kastenmeier for the one and only goal. And if we talk about teams and efficiency, Dusseldorf have been guilty on several occasions of being incredibly ineffective inside the final third, and that was definitely the case in this game, because Kastenmeier was kept quite busy given the percentage of shots on target to total shots from Kiel. But yeah, another one of those weird performances where Dusseldorf, who've looked lights out the last 2 weeks, they smashed Nuremberg on a match day 15, and they put 5 past Schalke the week prior. But this was just one of those games where anything they tried just didn't seem to work. And ultimately, it was a relatively fortuitous goal in some respects that put them put their winning streak to an end.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it just bears mentioning that Kiel has such a solid defense as well. I mean, if we just look at Fallen Kleine Becker, who I think has been one of the, you know, shooting stars of the season, and Tom Rothe. I actually interviewed Kleine Becker earlier in the season, and he's just so mature. He's an under 21 national team player for Germany. And him and Tom Rothe, interestingly, they both come out of the Dortmund youth setup. So they've known each other for a long time. But for such a young defense to be so consistent at the back, and you know, there's always this saying that attack wins games and defense wins championships. And I think their defense this season has also been one of the reasons why they are so high up in the table and now eyeing up promotion even.
Yeah, and the soaring heights for Kiel, it's not a position they're too unfamiliar with. Several seasons the Marcus Anfangs, the Tim Valter era, they have been in the hunt. And it's quite incredible. We're talking about it last week with Seb Stafford-Bloor about how this team turns out different players and they thrive elsewhere. And yet they seem to rebuild themselves, find a way to get back to the summit. And maybe this will be the year that they are able to surpass the hurdle of the relegation playoff and perhaps make it to the Bundesliga.
Yeah, we'll see what the second half of the season brings, but they certainly look consistent enough at the moment to be there until the end.
Absolutely, and they almost made it 2-0 in this game as well. Jan Vita Arp, who had scored in his prior two games for Kiel, had a great chance, but it was denied by a really good save by Kastenmeier. For Dusseldorf, they were much better in the second half. 13 of their 17 shots on goal came in that second period, and look, they've got a very dynamic forward half presence with the likes of Christoph Solis. Vincent Vermey has really shown to be quite apt at this level after jumping up from the Drissa Liga last season along with Yannick Engelhardt. But a bit disappointing from their perspective because they did have sustained periods of control, but their biggest issue was the final third. And it makes you wonder after... considering the week that they had, they won out in the cup and they're playing St. Pauli in the round of eight, as mentioned. But it can be a bit of a two-edged sword for them because they've shown their best is incredible. They're the top scorers in the division. But they do have games. They had this a similar game against Paderborn earlier in the season where they completely dominated the game. They were mightily impressive in the final third, but the difference was is they couldn't put Paderborn away, and ultimately they were punished. And there was definitely some similarities in that sort of phase that they can be beatable at home, and teams have shown now that it's entirely possible that they do have a little bit of weakness at the defensive end, even if the goal comes in fortuitous circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. They created more chances than they, they created more chances than the opponent. They had a better passing accuracy, and they just didn't capitalize enough on that to make more goals.
Absolutely.
Or any goals, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
After beating Magdeburg in the cup, well, great news. They get to play Magdeburg again away. This time it'll be in league play on Saturday afternoon. Kiel are home to Hanover in the top spiel, the top kickoff game on Saturday night. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we'll discuss the Group 2 games, starting with the aforementioned Hanover when they hosted Karlsruhe. Two teams looking to win for the first time in quite some time were both Hanover and Karlsruhe. In the scheme of things, Karlsruhe very much trying to sneak away from the bottom three, whilst Hanover, who had been in relatively good form heading into the previous international break, haven't been able to recapture the form and they're starting to slide down the table. It looked relatively well for Karlsruhe, who opened the scoring 11 minutes in. Leon Jensen's cross, looking for Budu Zizavatse, it was unfortunately turned in by Marcel Haustenberg, who was rather confused that had actually happened. It got even worse for Hanover when one of their favourite sons found the back of the net. Lars Stindl, who's had a bit of an up-and-down season, might not have been producing the goal-scoring numbers you'd expect. Well, he benefited from a horrendous mistake from Phil Neumann. A quick pass to Stindl, who had a one-on-one with Ron Robert Zieler, and Stindl didn't miss. And at 2-0, there was a feeling that Karlsruhe were going to score a vital 3 points and move away from the bottom three. But this is Karlsruhe, and the one thing that Karlsruhe hasn't been able to do quite well this season is hold on to leads. And when Andreas Vogelsammer scored on 72 minutes, the pressure intensified. Hanover were coming with a force, and eventually the resistance was broken in the first minute of stoppage time. Patrick Drevis's initial save was parried into the worst possible place. Sy Moria was there to pick up the pieces, and he scores his first goal of the season. And Hanover, despite being winless in their last four games, pick up an important point for them. Karlsruhe had a really good start to this game, and it culminated in the goal. They were dangerous from set pieces. Their first 15 minutes was fantastic, but They couldn't hold on to the momentum and the intensity of the game. And you just had that sick feeling that once Vogelsammer scored the goal on 72 minutes, that last 20 minutes where it sort of gets really nervy, teams throw the kitchen sink to try and get an equaliser, the goal seemed inevitable. And the way they conceded the goal is the stuff of goalkeeping nightmares. And as someone who's played the position, it's the hardest thing to get over. And in the situation they're in, where they're trying to avoid the playoff spot, where there's a gaggle of teams between 17 and 20 points, every point is vital. And we talk about Christian, we talked about Tim Walter, for example, as someone who could potentially be on the hot seat. Christian Eichner might be in the similar vein. There was a lot of expectations that this Karlsruhe team were going to be at least a top six, top half team. And given the quality of players they have, they've underachieved, if we're being honest. And this opportunity of 3 points that went once again fell to the wayside, it definitely feels like there's going to be some more pressure on Eichner, not just for the remainder of the Hinrunde against Elversberg, but potentially throughout the winter break.
Yeah, I agree, especially because this is also one of those clubs where the so-called Umfeld, so the surroundings and the fan base, can be very loud and influential and very unhappy when things are not going well. And I agree also with you about the quality of the players. I mean, you only need to look at Paul Newell, for example, who has a brilliant left foot. You're wondering, why don't we see that quality more often? Lars Stindl was such a big signing in the summer. And he, you know, of course he scored in this game, but you would also think that him as a talisman, he could lift up the team a bit more. So yeah, it's definitely concerning. I mean, 14th is not where they will want to be at all, especially so far into the season.
Absolutely. And we've spoken about it ad nauseum this season, the defense, which has been quite problematic for them. And I just don't think anyone would have expected the dogs are making their presence felt as well, of the disappointment that Karlsruhe have been this season. Only 4 wins. And to put that in perspective, only 2 teams have won on fewer occasions this season, Eintracht Braunschweig being one of them, VfL Osnabrück being the other. And Marie, you're right, the quality of players they've got, your money, Marvin Vanitseks of the world, your Igor Matonovic's, are really having to, you know, there's a lot of burden on them to provide important offensive output. But yeah, it's really disappointing for Karlsruhe, who obviously have Elversberg on Sunday. But for Hanover, a massive result for them, because another one of those teams that has massive attention on them from the local media. We know how outspoken Martin Kind is. As well, but they're a team that has a lot of pressure, and the last few seasons have been well below expectations. And there's this thought that, well, this season is going pretty similar to last season. They were a top 5-6 team heading into the Hinrunde, but post the winter break they were winless in their opening 8 games. And I think with Hanover, and we've talked about it on the podcast quite often, there's not a lot to be convinced about just yet in what has been a pretty turbulent year and a half under Stefan Leitl.
Yeah, this game could really lift them. They came up from 2-0 down in this game, including an own goal, which can often break the morale of the team. And just, I think especially scoring in stoppage time to win that big point could really lift them and maybe add some stability again. So I think this will feel a lot better than just 1 point for them.
Absolutely. And they do have Ron Robert-Zieler to thank as well, who put in a very strong performance. He's had a bit of an up and down season, but definitely when he's on form, Hanover certainly seems to be a much better team. And yeah, I know people will call me crazy, but you can't put a price on high quality goalkeeping, especially in a division where it's so tight and every point is vital in the goal to promotion. And if Hanover want to be considered as a serious contender, they need high quality goalkeeping and as well as a strong foundation in defense, which they've improved upon from last season. And that comes in tone when you bring in someone like a Marcel Halstenberg as well, with such vast experience playing at the highest level. And it's definitely elevated them defensively, not only to to improve in all facets of the defensive game, but more importantly, the mental side of things, where he concedes an unlucky own goal, but gets right back to business and starts to rebuild the foundations of their defense.
Yeah, and same experience for Ron-Robert Zieler as well. Like you said, I think when your striker running against him, running against goal, and you see that face and that jersey, it's different from perhaps, you know, it's like in the Bundesliga, sometimes the Manuel Neuer effect, although they're both a bit older now, their experience and their charisma speaks for themselves.
Absolutely. Let's see how they get on against Kiel on Saturday. And as mentioned, Karlsruhe host Elversberg on Sunday. Let's head to the Ostseestadion. Hansa Rostock hosted Schalke in a pivotal match at the bottom section of the table. Both sides looking to get away from the bottom three. Schalke were sitting in 16th heading into match day 16. 15th were Hansa. This game had a lot happening on and off the pitch. On the pitch, it was a very cagey first half of chances limited. Then the game was disbanded in many ways for 25 odd minutes due to some incidences in the stands. And once we returned, Junior Brumado was sent off for an elbow to the face and a pretty clear red card. It was dirty, it was unnecessary, and something you would see in Australian rules football, for example, which would also be given as a high tackle and most likely 2 weeks for high contact and impact to the head. The second half was very much Schalke dominated, and they huffed and they puffed, and eventually they blew the house down. Blender Drizzy, who's really found a place in Carol Gerritz's starting 11, he was fantastic in this game, and he opened the scoring on 72 minutes, and then a counter-attacking goal just 14 minutes later when Keenan Karaman, who definitely gets credit for this goal, scored brilliantly past Marcus Kolka to give Schalke a vital 3 points. And up to 13th, they go. Interesting statistic. This is the first time since match day 10 and 11 of the 21-22 season that Schalke have kept two clean sheets on the bounce. Yes, it's been quite a long time for the long-suffering Schalke fans, but also back-to-back wins is vital for a team that has really been so woefully poor, to put it politely. And for a team that has obviously mass expectations of, well, we're expecting them to go back up straight away, that seems rather unlikely at this stage of the season. But for morale and the team at this present stage, just to get points is a massive, and for Carol Gerritz to prove that he is the right man for this job, it's an important step in the right direction.
Yeah, exactly. And I think playing at Rostock for a coach new to the Bundesliga, new to the second division, of course, That's tough. That's about as tough as it gets in terms of the heated atmosphere. And of course, the events, the unfortunate events in the first half showed that. But this is what Carol Gerritz needs. And, you know, to win the trust of the players. And this is a team where, of course, when Thomas Reis was dismissed, it appeared that that had something to do with a disconnect between the locker room and players. And nothing is more convincing than wins, and winning two back-to-back and then in such style in this particular game will do wonders for his image at the club as well.
Absolutely, and as someone who has a rather impressive resume of taking clubs to the Europa League and having long runs there, and like it's a big task. There's a massive rebuild internally, but also to gain the trust of the fans who, you know, you get the banner last week against Osnabrück where it's 3 points. That's the bare minimum we're expecting from the week before, which is quite the ask. And obviously they achieved that. But as you mentioned, Osnabrück is a very hostile environment. And one thing that really stands out in the games at the Ostseestadion is that if it's not hostile on the pitch, it's certainly going to be away from it. And it creates a real intense environment. But it did feel that once Brumado was sent off and then heading into the second half, you know, when Schalke started to really dominate and dictate the play and control possession and start to, create from that possession, you could sense that Schalke were turning that hostility away. And once they got the opening goal, which was just horribly defended. It was just a simple pass from Tirota to Idrizzi, who was somehow unmarked, given, you know, I just don't know how you can leave a player unmarked inside your own 18-yard box, but a very cool finish from Idrizzi. It just makes you wonder, like, for Rostock, they're obviously under pressure. They've dropped a ton of games in the past couple of months. Maybe another coach who's on the hot seat, Alia Schwarz, because he's been known as a bit of a firefighter, similar to the mold of your Uwe Koschnatz, your Bruno Labbadias.
Yeah.
This was another result where, look, you got two teams that are really struggling to pick up points. An opportunity to do what they did last season, where they beat Schalke, be it in Gelsenkirchen. And look, they really had no chance once they went down to 10 men. They were invested in trying to hold for the 0-0. And once you do that, you invite all the pressure, and eventually it broke for them.
Yeah, and this is, like you hinted at, because they're both towards the end of the table. This is one of those famous six-point games against a direct rival, and that's got to be extra painful to lose that at home. I did just want to mention the scenes in the ranks. So I watched an interview with the head of police at that game, and he said that the glass walls behind the away end and the home crowd were first fractured and then completely knocked down, and two security officers and one actual medical worker were injured as they went into the section. So it's always sad to see that at games. And there, he said that it was up to discussion that the game would be suspended totally. So yeah, I don't know the inside of what happened there, and, you know, between the two fan camps, but I guess glad that the game was able to resume after everything.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a video circulating showing the scene of someone in the guest block with what looked like some sort of weapon, basically working at the glass divider between the guest block and obviously what tends to happen quite often at Rostock games as well as other stadiums is there's the gap of seats between sections. But yeah, really disappointing. I think there also probably could be a discussion about why people were allowed to walk in with balaclavas inside the stadium, because the person and several people were wearing balaclavas in that section. Oh boy, thunderstorm. So yeah, I think that's really disappointing, and it probably wouldn't surprise me if there's some sort of fine coming as well, and that kind of behavior is not really necessary. Detracts from the fact that, you know, Schalke scored a vital 3 points, and it just completely unnecessary to have to even talk about it. But unfortunately, that is the way. They've got Grotefurt at home on Friday night. They'll be hoping to make it three games in a row with victory, and that would be quite the momentum to take into the winter break. Rostock have Paderborn away, but what? I guess given that we can be a little bit biased because we just can be. It's obviously been a really difficult season for Schalke, but under Gerrards in particular, is there anything that's particularly impressed you?
Yeah, I think if anything, Lino Tempelmann and Paul Seguin are finally showing some of their playing qualities, their creative qualities that too often this season they weren't able to show, because those were two really impressive signings for a team trying to win promotion in the second division. So I'm looking forward to seeing more from them, and I think those two players have been a bright light for me. And then of course you have to mention Kenan Karaman. I mean, he was already good before Gerrard, but he's been so amazing for them this season, and yeah, just someone that can lift up the rest of the players around him by his attitude, his runs, his energy, his tackling. I think he's really impressed me this season so far.
I agree. Rostock of Paderborn to end their Hinrunde. We dropped Fürth. Let's talk about them. They welcomed Magdeburg on Saturday afternoon to the Sportpark Ronhof Thomas Sommer. Well, Fürth were looking for a ninth clean sheet this season and to extend their winning run to six was the goal. But poor, they were close. They looked great. They looked like they were going to win. Tim Lempele scored on 59 minutes, and all seemed well and good for Alexander Zorniger's side to take the 3 points. But someone forgot to tell the script. Well, someone forgot to tell Mohamed El Halkouri that the scriptwriters had told that Fert were going to win this game, because in the fifth minute of stoppage time, his delicate finish beat Jonas Ulbjerg, who denied him of a ninth clean sheet. And Magdeburg score a vital point in Fürth. I was mightily impressed with Jonas Ulbjerg. I talked about it last week, and I made the claim that he could be a future German international goalkeeper, and I'm sure that will raise a lot of eyebrows that someone at 19 could eventually be at that position. But he was fantastic in this game when Magdeburg were bringing the heat, especially late on in the game. He stood up, and it had to take something special to beat him.
Yeah, and he's already played for the Germany under-21s and been nominated for them. And it takes something as a goalkeeper to play in such an even keeled division and to bring performances week to week. I think he's so good on the line, you know, on the goal line, making these big saves. And to me, often for goalkeepers and strikers, I think those, you know, really center forwards are, those two for me are perhaps the hardest positions to excel when you're young, because it has so much to do with stature, both physically and also, you know, in the metaphorical sense. So I don't think it's too soon to pop his name in the Germany goalkeeping debate, especially because in the A team for Germany, the goalkeepers that are now nominated are all over the age of 30. So why not?
Absolutely. I just had to mute my microphone because we're getting some heavy thunder, and that's definitely going to be used in the copy. But look, yeah, agreed. And also the biggest thing for a goalkeeper is playing time. You can only pick one of them. So for them, it's mightily important. Holy moly. It's mightily important that they play. And he was great at Regensburg and was almost key to keeping them into the playoffs. And despite a shaky start to the season, he's been fantastic and arguably, in my opinion, one of the best goalkeepers in the division. On the other end, Dominik Reimann was great in the early phases as well. When Fürth were in control, they really were the dominant side in the first half. Reimann made a couple of key saves to keep Magdeburg in the game. And it's such an interesting facet with Magdeburg, because we know defensively they're a bit of a wild thing in the sense that they can completely just shut down, and a lot of the responsibility falls on Reimann. And in this game, it was no different. The first half, Fürth were on the prowl, and Reimann made some big saves. And ultimately, in the end, it was the difference in keeping Magdeburg in the contest and leaving Fürth with a result.
Yeah, and I also think it's worth mentioning the goal scorer Tim Lempele for Fürth, who. And that was such a stunning goal. You know, so many players were involved in the build-up. And speaking of young players, you know, he's also someone that Köln is still watching. Of course, he's a product of FC Köln. And he's doing really well this season at Fürth. He's really using that as an opportunity to show his skills.
Absolutely. Four goals this season for Lempele and Ulbjerg also at Köln go. So maybe Cologne have got something in the water over there, because they've got some good young players playing on loan that could definitely make an impact, depending on if they're in the Bundesliga next season or not. Yeah. Fürth have Schalke as the heavens are beginning to open. And as mentioned, Magdeburg, they have Fortuna Düsseldorf. That Fürth-Schalke game is World Feed. Check your local listings to see if it's available in your country and territory. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll discuss the final three games of Matchday 16, starting with Wiesbaden and Eintracht Braunschweig. Wiesbaden had lost two on the bounce, and they were hoping to avoid a third consecutive defeat when they welcomed Eintracht Braunschweig to the Britta Arena on Friday night. Braunschweig have a point to prove that they can actually compete with Daniel Schoening as their head coach, but they didn't get off to the best start, conceding 18 minutes, a set piece that was well headed in by Alexander Vukotic, his second of the season. The theme of this match, they did seem woefully inefficient in the final third, and Wiesbaden were guilty of that. They dominated the first half, but only one goal as the teams headed into the dressing room. A player who's been fantastic under Daniel Schoening is Fabio Kaufmann. And 3 minutes into the second half, he opened his account for the game. A brilliant goal to get his third of the season. Then Braunschweig took the lead. Ryan Philippe, who's someone who they signed from the Luxembourg League, he scored, I think it was 25 goals or something ludicrous. Someone who Braunschweig fans have been wanting to see a bit more of, and it's a brilliant counter-attacking move, and Philippe gets his first goal of the campaign and a 2-1 lead. Daniel Schoening on the touchline. Nervous celebrations, not willing to commit fully, but he was able to commit fully for the third goal when Kaufmann gets his second of the game. And a 3-1 victory for Eintracht Braunschweig. It's their third win of the season. And it gets them just 6 points closer to Hansa Rostock, sitting in 16th place in the table. And I said it, I've got it in the notes here, that Kaufmann's sort of resurrection under Schoening was quite similar to Robin Hack of last season, where Hack struggled in the early phases. But once Schoening came in, if Bielefeld were to win games, it was because Robin Hack was scoring goals. And Kaufmann in this game was so worldly in his ability to produce not only his own goals, but also the one of Philippe. It's an excellent pass. But the one thing that really comes out is the changes at halftime. Bringing on Florian Kruger, Helgason, and Philippe definitely changed the dynamic of the game. And once Braunschweig got on top, and we haven't said this often this season, they didn't let go.
Yeah, and I mean, just look at the table. All the teams around them didn't do well. So 3 points really carries them forward. Of course, Osnabrück drew, but they're still quite far away. Kaiserslautern, KSC, Hansa Rostock all lost. So 3 huge points for Eintracht Braunschweig to keep the belief and really, yeah, keep hanging on points away from home. Really good performance from them, and led by Kaufmann, as you said, he's been fantastic in this match.
Yeah, brought the energy, the intensity, and the creativity that has been a real issue for Braunschweig this season. They're not the league's worst goal scoring team without cause. And, you know, losing Emmanuel Faure, which we've talked about quite often throughout the season, has been a big impact for them, and trying to find someone to fill the void. And if Kaufmann is going to bring those kinds of performances, then Braunschweig will take that every day of the week, because it was clear he was the dominant, you know, factor in this game and turning it around for Braunschweig and getting them a step closer to getting out of the bottom two. There's still plenty of football to be had, but a team that has lost 11 times in 16 games, they haven't had a lot to cheer about. But on Friday night, given that it's not exactly a short journey from Braunschweig to Wiesbaden, those travelling support had plenty to cheer about. The way that they attacked the second half in particular should give them a bit of optimism heading forward. And for Wiesbaden, pretty disappointing second half. They were very much overwhelmed by a very effective and efficient Braunschweig outfit that really brought the intensity. They did have their chances through Ivan Pretayen and John Iredale, but ultimately it was a fleeting performance for Wiesbaden, who now dropped 3 on the bounce. They're at St. Pauli on Sunday. Braunschweig, well, they host Kaiserslautern in their final game of 2023. Let's talk about Kaiserslautern. They welcomed Hertha to the Fritz Walter Stadion. Dimitrios Gramotsis gets his first game in charge in the league after they celebrated their DFB Pokal triumph against Nuremberg. They both found out today, or on Sunday, that they'll be playing each other in the round of 8. But they did battle yesterday, on the Saturday, for 3 vital league points. Kaiserslautern have lost 4 in a row in league play. They were hoping to break that, and it looked good early when they took the lead on 16 minutes. Almani Touré getting his first goal. He's only been at the club for a handful of weeks. An incredibly athletic play to get his feet up and put the ball into the back of the net. 1-0 for Kaiserslautern. But then at halftime, some changes. Fabian Riese, who they might as well build a statue at the Olympiastadion, he's been so unbelievable for them this season. He comes on, and it's just like this team functions so differently when he was on. And 4 minutes into the second half, they get the equaliser, and it's a sensational goal from Florian Niederlechner. Just incredible bit of technique to put the ball into the back of the net. He's now got 6 goals in his last 3 games. It's been a really good rise for him. Unfortunately for Kaiserslautern, it got even worse, because 9 minutes from normal time, Hertha will take the spoils. It's a bit of a goalmouth scramble. The ball trickles to Michael Oliver Kempf, and Kempf doesn't need a second time of asking. He puts the ball in the back of the net. And don't look now, but Hertha are climbing the table. They currently sit in seventh position, tied with Hanover on points with 24. They are 3 points behind Dusseldorf, and more importantly, just 4 points behind Hamburg in that relegation playoff spot. And given the start of the season they've had, and it seems almost remarkable that they're in this situation where now they're sneakily catching teams, and a lot of it, unsurprisingly, has to do with the aforementioned Fabian Riza, who just has been putting in some incredible performances. And I think Pal Dardai realised that if Hertha are going to make this charge, invest all their effort into making sure that Fabian Riza is the pivotal point of their team.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the cup game midweek, and it was like playing FIFA or something. It's just, they gave the ball to him, and every time he does something, and whenever he's on the pitch, the fans are like murmuring, you know. It's almost like watching a game in England where, you know, you always hear the whoo in the stands. Oh, he's been sensational. His vision, his shooting, his dribbling, just really incredible individual player for them. And he seems to just fit Hertha like a glove. You know, he, of course, came from the Holstein Kiel and the Schalke youth setup. And to me, nothing hinted at this present. So kudos to him for really turning it up and becoming such a great league player.
His last 2.5 seasons have to be studied, because it's been quite a meteoric rise. But he is the real deal in this league, and arguably one of the top 5 players in the division currently. His importance to this team is clear to see, and it was so clear in this game that the first half for Hertha were just completely wild. It was chaotic. They were very disorganized going forward. There was really not a lot happening. But the moment they brought him on at the half, and fair enough, he'd played 120 minutes of football in the cup against Hamburg, it just completely shifted the way that they played. They were organized. There was clear an understanding of the instructions of what they needed to do. And they let him cook. That's the simple thing. They let him operate. And when you have someone with such high quality allowed to operate in those areas, good things happen. And that's exactly what happened in this game, where even though he didn't score, nor was he a provider of the assist, just his presence gave Hertha the confidence to go out and win this game. And now you just, maybe they should be in the conversation in the Hanovers, the Fortuna Dusseldorfs. Maybe they do deserve a little bit more credit, because certainly from my perspective, didn't have them really being that close in the mix heading into this season.
No, and I think sometimes it does come down to just one player really leading a side, and you only need to look at Kaiserslautern for the opposite effect. Early in the season, Ragnar Ache was so important for that team, and since his injury, it's just, you know, it's a team in fall, and even the manager effect didn't take effect this game, and yeah, I think maybe some dark clouds over the Betzenberg at the moment.
A great example of that point, though, is that Ake played the cup game and he scored and they ended up winning. And he didn't play this game, obviously trying to manage him since his return from injury. But that's 6 defeats in their last 7 games. And look, Dimitrios Gramotsis, someone that we're both very familiar with from his time in Gelsenkirchen as well as in Darmstadt, it's a big task. Another club that has mass expectations. There was a feeling that potentially they were going to have that second season slip, which has happened. But a great example was this game of where they're at the moment, where their first half was really impressive, had the opportunities to make it 2-3-0 in this game. Don't take it. Then they have the red card, which was just an awful challenge from Arumu. And then, you know, they were on the back foot for the majority of the second half, and to be honest, they deserve to lose, because if you don't make the most of your chances, and you after creating so many really good ones in the first half, and you know, you all you're doing is just putting more pressure on the defense, and eventually, if the pressure is too much, it'll eventually break down, and that's exactly what happened in this game.
Exactly. I agree.
Right. So Hertha welcome Osnabrück on their final game of the season. Kaiserslautern are at Braunschweig in what is going to be a 6-pointer for both sides. And lastly, let's head to Elversberg. They hosted Nuremberg on Sunday afternoon. This game ended a 0-0. Daichi Hayashi's second goal of the campaign. Something that has been very prevalent in the Nuremberg fan base is they want Hayashi to get some more minutes and play. He started, fans vindicated, 3 points on the way back to Bavaria, and an important win for Nuremberg because they have been horrible out of the international break. They'd given up 9 goals in their first 2 games coming back. The 4-1 to Karlsruhe, the 5-0 defeat at home to Fortuna Dusseldorf, where they were frankly embarrassing. Good response for them. They were under a lot of pressure in this game. Elversberg were very dominant in the early phases of the game, but similar story. They just couldn't convert any of their chances. They were forced a lot to shoot from distance, and that's usually a recipe for defeat. And it ended to be the case because the best quality chance came from inside the box, and Hayashi took it with both hands.
Yeah, I actually thought this was a very mature performance by Elversberg once again. And maybe one of those stories where the result doesn't really tell the tale of the game. But yeah, I mean, if there was one guy to score the goal, then of course it would have to be Hayashi. So really happy for him and for Nuremberg winning those crucial 3 points away from home.
It's vital for them given the situation and not wanting to put themselves in the dregs of that the gaggle of teams between 11 and 16, which is only separated by 4 points. Defensively, we know they've been pretty hit and miss. So for them to keep a clean sheet as well against a pretty strong offensive team in Elversberg on the road, given what we've talked about just before, that's an important building block for them. Just a question of whether they can keep that up into the next game.
Exactly. And as you were saying, even, I mean, this table is getting so close, even from Schalke to Hamburg, it's only 9 points now. So I can see you smiling. there's a lot to play for yet in the second Bundesliga.
It is exactly how we like it. It's close. It's unpredictable and anything can happen. And we just get to enjoy it for another week. Let's see if Nuremberg can actually bring that defensive pressure against the Hamburg side. Both teams are under a lot of pressure, so that should be a fascinating game. Elversberg at Karlsruhe on Sunday afternoon. Marie, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. Where can our followers find you on social media?
Yeah, you can find me on X. I'm still getting used to saying that. Yeah. at Marie Schubo. And you can find my English language writing on Forbes under Marie Schulte-Bockum and my German language writing on sport1.de.
Definitely worth checking out. We are going to say goodbye for today, but we'll be back next week to discuss all of the action from the final match day of the 2023 year. It has been an incredible season so far, and I'm sure more action to come on the weekend. We hope you have a great time watching the Zweite Bundesliga, and we'll see you next time when the ball continues to roll.